This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Black studies has been an important academic field since its inception in the 1960s, and certainly cases like the Trayvon Martin shooting show the continued relevance and need for these programs. But it turns out that black studies programs are fighting for their lives at some public universities around the country. It's in this climate that Duke University is hosting a conference called Black Thought 2.0, New Media and the Future of Black Studies. It aims to examine how new technology and social media are transforming the field. And joining me now to talk about it is Mark Anthony Neal, a professor of black popular culture at Duke University's African and African-American Studies program. He was one of the organizers and will moderate a panel at the conference. Welcome back, Mark. Good to have you here.
Great to be on, Frank. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Tell us about this conference and sort of what it is and why it is. Start with what.
Well, part of it is that, you know, what we've seen over the last 5 or 6 years is that there have been these incredible activist moments in the black community, much of it driven by social media. We can go back to the Janus 6. We can even go back a little earlier to the response to Hurricane Katrina. We saw it in the Troy Davis state murder early at the end of last year, and, of course, most recently with Trayvon Martin. And what we're seeing is that we have a population of particularly young folks who are able to organize and get activist mind and do these incredible things. And in fact, the black intelligentsia is lagging behind. Much of the research has suggested that black consumers of digital culture, black users of digital technology are actually ahead of the digital curve in many ways, even as we talk about a digital gap. And so in some ways, this is about black leaders, black thought leaders really catching up to, you know, our audience.
So if you're going to do the research, what's your thesis? What are you going to look in or hypothesis about what's going on and why this activism is taking place through social media?
Well, part of it is that, you know, there's this dynamic where I would argue that social media in some ways has always existed within the black community. That if you go back and you think about field songs on work songs on plantations, that was a form of social media. The way that the Greensboro Four movement, February 1, 1960, the language that we would use to describe it now is that it went viral. So that was a form of social media, except at that point in time was mimeograph machines and word of mouth. So in some ways, it's something very natural. And what some of the research has shown is that, in fact, more than 25% of all Twitter users here in the United States are, in fact, black. And again, that's twice the population of blacks in the United States. And some of that research suggests that part of it is that African Americans use Twitter as a form of instant messaging. The term that I very often use is fictive kin, the way that if you come across black folks who don't know each other, they'll instinctively give each other a head nod, you know, just to acknowledge their presence. And that's exactly what they do on Twitter in a digital context.
So you say it's always with us in the sense that social media is a long sort of a deep-seated and deep-rooted form. The technology may be changing. Is it changing activism at all?
Well, I think that's the ongoing question. You know, what I say about folks, you know, in relationship to black studies, this doesn't necessarily change the work that we do. It just provides a different platform for us to be able to use it. You know, Google has done a series of white papers about, you know, black uses of digital culture. And what it says is that digital is our microphone. You know, that black folks use digital culture as a microphone to talk about what's going on, this incessant need and desire to always be in communication. So it's just a very different platform. Folks still are going to need to write books and be in academic journals and do shows like yours and to be on the, you know, the corporate television news channels. But, you know, Twitter and Facebook and other forms of social media offers a whole nother kind of context to do this kind of work.
But when you talk about activism, it seems that all of the examples you used are kind of spot activist moments. They're ways to mark a moment and bring attention to something that might otherwise have fallen off the map. What about the sustaining? What about addressing the underlying systemic problems that have been with us, you know, from the beginning? Is it more or less effective in dealing with those?
And I think that's where the presence of black scholars in social media is incredibly important. You know, I tell folks I probably spend about 70% of the time that I'm on Twitter, you know, very much in a professorial mode, providing historical context to conversations, providing historical examples. I think, you know, what you have is a generation of folks, you know, the digital generation, if you will, digital natives, who are very energetic and are very natural in terms of the way that they use the technology. What they really need is like historical content.
Well, thinking about that, tweeting historical context is kind of a strange thought. And as a professor, somebody who's used to reading and writing, you know, long books that take their time to develop a thought. Does it change the way you approach your scholarship, the way you approach study when you know that the providing context has to happen just
you know, what changes for me is that I always have to be in mind that, you know, whatever the work that I do, I can't solely think that I'm only communicating with my colleagues and peers in a university, right? That I really have to take a responsibility to find a way to articulate the work that I do to broader audiences, right? That aren't interested in the jargon, are not necessarily interested in the fine arguments and details that you might find in an academic journal when, you know, when there's these incredible debates that, you know, folks are looking for answers for what's going on in their lives, particularly around social justice issues and politics and cultural, et cetera, et cetera. And black intellectuals, you know, I would argue, Mark Lamont Hill has argued this a great deal, that, you know, we don't have the luxury not to be engaged in this way.
So you can engage that way. But again, I think about context as sometimes taking two or three or four steps to offer. Yeah. You know, first there was this, but then you have to look back at that. And it could have gone two different ways. Hard to tweet that, isn't it?
You know, you get a rhythm to it. I mean, that's, you know, when I first came to Twitter, ironically, because former Duke graduates who had taken classes with me and wanted to somehow maintain our classroom experience, you know, across space and distance. Like, why don't you get on Twitter? And it took me a long time to get the rhythm of it. But once you're there, you know, it actually becomes very natural.
Talking to Mark Anthony Neal about a conference at Duke that is going to take a look at social media, new technology, and black studies. One of the presenters at that conference and a panel member is Kimberly Ellis. She is with us on the phone as well, and she's going to be on the panel. Kimberly Ellis, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us about your panel and what you're going to be talking about.
Well, my panel is talking about online activism. And so I will be talking about what happens and the impact that we can make when we use Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and Tumblr, what happens when we use them all together, what we can do individually, and how movements work. I think the best example that we can all see today has been with regards to the Trayvon Martin situation and the tragedy, but the wonderful part about social media and online activism is that were it not for social media and online activism, many of us probably still wouldn't even know his name.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of bringing attention, of bringing social action on a spot basis, it seems very powerful, and it's obvious how it's powerful. I wonder what your sense is, Kimberly, in the long run about social media as an effective agent for changing the systemic, the underlying problems that certainly the Trayvon Martin and these other cases demonstrate. These are not these are not momentary problems. These aren't isolated cases. These are the fruit of a system that needs changing. Does social media help us there, or is it a distraction? Hey, we went to the rally. Great. I've done my bit. Now I can go home.
I'm a major advocate of using social media precisely for activism. But we do have to keep in mind that as activists, what we usually do is pass out flyers and knock on people's doors and beg them to get involved. And oftentimes we're strangers trying to reach out to broader audiences. And what the technology allows us to do is to really present the story and to take our 100 or so flyers and multiply them by the thousands. And I think that's really important. And it, also on a very basic level, we just have to know that communicating the story and getting the facts out, it becomes a lot easier with social media because you can literally upload a picture and some facts about the case, a blog link, you know, about any particular issue, as well as, you know, the flyer for the rally. You can do that all in one tweet. Especially if you use a TwitPic or something like that. Those things, you know, we can't duplicate the amount of time and effort that it takes on a person-by-person basis. We're able to magnify and fully amplify the work that we're trying to do online. So it's not a distraction at all. In fact, it's an enhancement because I think that what tends to happen is that we have fun in social media for sure. We watch television, we give people our pictures and our food and whatnot. But when something serious happens, it really puts our lives in context. And social media can kind of teach you about the ways in which you might waste your time and how you might make better use of your time.
Mark, is there any indication that social media that has gotten people together, you mentioned Janus 6, some of the earlier questions or earlier issues that people have gotten involved in, that people stay together, that there's actually a movement and a momentum that builds up?
I can speak to that just to the kind of relationships that I've been able to build on Twitter, you know, with scholars that I had never been in conversation with before. in different disciplines, doing different kinds of work. And so I think those relationships are very clearly there, right? And again, the question is, and Kim makes a great point. I mean, what we do with social media, it's simply a tool. It's another tool at our use to be able to do the kind of work that we're interested in. And you never want to put too much stock in any of these tools. But we do seal the building of relationships. Many of the people who are going to be on the panel this weekend are folks that I only know. I've never met Kim, for instance, in person. You know, Kim and I, you know, began connecting with each other on Professor Lee Baker's listserv, you know, 15 years ago, right? Before, the precursor to what social media is today. And so, you know, even this conference is about folks who've been able to work together and collaborate, you know, across place and space, you know, by using social media.
It's also about the state of Black studies in America. You think that it is under attack, particularly at public universities. Tell us about the state of Black studies.
There's no question. And when you consider state legislatures at this point having to cut budgets and looking at the money that they're giving to their state university system and looking at the kind of programs that they don't think that they can justify, or, you know, have been sold a fake bill of goods about what those programs are. We look exactly at what's happening in secondary, you know, in elementary schools in Arizona as an example of that. So this stuff is under assault. I mean, part of what's important for Black scholars to be visible in this way in social media, it actually shows a direct correlation between the kind of work that we do to be able to have direct impact, not just in terms of cultural issues and these kind of political issues, but in terms of policy. When we have someone like Sandy Darity, who's chair of African and African American Studies at Duke, and is always talking about, you know, jobs plans and along those lines, those kinds of things that really can enhance public policy, that speaks to what our role is at this point in time.
Kim, what would you say about the state of Black studies in this country and the need for it still?
Well, you know, I am a very grateful recipient of all of the hard work that so many of my elders have participated in establishing Africana and Black Studies. And so I was actually a Black Studies major in undergrad. I was a double major in English and African and African American Studies under the wonderful tutelage of Dr. Rudolph Bird, who's recently passed away. But so our grounding in Africana studies was always undergirded by public service and social responsibility as well as academic excellence. So I don't see any disparity or any difference in my goal. What I see is the lack of institutional support. I see the attacks on the program. And I think that for both Mark and myself, as well as many other scholars who are online, there is a tremendous thirst and hunger for what Black Studies has to offer them as individuals in the world. And so the irony is, as the lack of institutional support has decreased, the increase from the public in terms of their interest and their desire to absorb what Black Studies has to offer has greatly increased.
And you put
so
your finger on
paradox.
Yeah, when you put your finger on something very important, I think Black Studies from the start has been more than just an academic pursuit. There's a social justice component.
That was always the expectation. When you go back to that founding program, San Francisco State, 1967, they were very clear about that. You know, there was never any dispute. There was never any contradiction, you know, in that regard. And if anything, there may have been a period in the last 20 years where that particular vision of Black Studies has been lost. But what we've seen most recently with the newest generation of folks, you know, who are coming out of new PhD programs, you know, they're going much more, you know, back to those kind of traditions. And social media is one of the reasons why they see this kind of an enhanced engagement.
Although that's the thing that can attract and sort of enliven the interest in Black studies. It also is the greatest fear among the people who are perhaps in control at the moment.
And ironically, you know, it's not just young Black folks who are interested. You know, when I teach a class like Sampling Soul with Ninth Wonder, you know, and 60% of the students in the class are non-Black. You know, there's an incredible interest for this, not just in terms of the kind of cultural, you know, interest in these things, but also because of these kind of social justice and political questions that come up.
Cultural studies, of course, got started. Black studies got started because of the Eurocentric curricula that had been in the major universities, some way to add other voices to make sure that the whole story was being told. Was there ever an idea that someday they would all come together, that we wouldn't have to have cultural studies programs, that suddenly the curricula would reflect these voices by themselves?
I believe that occurred when I believe that we live in a post-race society.
Well, and of course, that's part of the attack, isn't it? We have a Black president. we don't need this stuff anymore.
This kind of stuff, right? And it's ironic, you know, because in the beginning, I think there was an uptick in interest in these kind of programs during the Obama presidency, just to try to put some sort of historical and cultural context to what kind of culture creates him. But very much in some sectors, it's gone the other kind of way, right? If this is a post-race society, do we really need to break apart these kinds of things?
That said, what has been the impact, do you think, of these programs? Because here we are again. We did elect an African-American president, and then the Trayvon Martin shooting, which takes us way, way back. So what's been the effect, do you think?
I think we've had a generations now of young folks who have gotten hungry about living a life of the mind because they've been able to read and be taught about and learn more about figures who look exactly like they do. There are generations, you know, prior to 1960 that could very rarely claim that, whether we're talking public schooling or secondary or on the college level. So I think that's very real. The number of black PhDs in the world, and not nearly all of them are in African-American studies, but so many of them got a kind of framing and hunger for a life of the mind and generating PhDs because they did take classes in black studies. When I see students at Duke who are coming from places, you know, as diverse as the Pratt Engineering School, you know, to art history, you know, who have never thought of themselves as black studies majors at all. And they come to these classes and we hear time and time again, no one had ever told me this before. I mean, that's what they say over and over again. Why have I never heard this before? And so I think that's where this is incredibly important, even as we go forward.
Do you think, Kimberly, do you think it's made progress? So for individuals who've seen people like themselves and then been inspired to move on, obviously a great benefit. But for society in general, the fact that we're still revisiting these cases over and over again, have we moved forward? Have black studies programs helped move us forward as a nation?
Yes, because black studies programs are not black people's lives. Black studies programs help us to process individual lives, help us to process human beings that simply live in America, in the world, and it helps us to process the experiences that black people have, as well as our influence on American culture and throughout the world. So we have to be careful in not equating a studies program with the actual existence and quality of life of black people, because I think the intellectual exercise and the need for a cogent and critical analysis of what we do in America and throughout the world will always be important. There should be black studies, 300 years from now, and maybe everybody will be fine, but there will always be a need for black studies in that sense. I understand, of course, we all know that black studies was created out of the revolution and out of struggle in that way, but I think that black studies has already proven itself 10 times over, even in terms of the way in which we process information, even in the academy. It's interdisciplinary. That is the result of black studies. That's not, black studies did not receive that from the academy. So black studies has already changed not only the quality of how we process information in the academy, but it has certainly changed American culture.
That said, given the threat, what do you think the future is, Mark Anthony Neal?
I think if you think about elite Research One institutions like the Dukes and the Princetons, there's always a struggle for resources, but we're producing great students and great students who see the value of the education. I think we see a very real assault in terms of public education, these universities that are supported by state legislatures. And really the only response to that is to continue to produce quality work and quality students that stand of the best of the possibility of American education.
I want to thank you both for being on the program. Mark Anthony Neal, a professor of black popular culture in Duke University's African and African American Studies program. He's going to be moderating a panel at the conference Black Thought 2.0, New Media and the Future of Black Studies. Kimberly Ellis is a writer, a playwright, and an actress and a participant in the conference, which is running from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. tomorrow at the John Hope Franklin Center at Duke University. Go to duke.edu for more information. Just ahead, the music of Midtown Dickens. Stay with us.